Welcome, friends, to Inks and Issues, a book club podcast for comics. I'm your host, Jonah Gregory.
And you can just call me Podcast Bold Spot Chan, Kieran.
And our special guest today, returning for part two of our Sailor Moon discussion, Brittany Gregory.
Love and Justice.
We're all going to be saving, what is it? Fighting Evil by Moonlight.
Winning Love by Daylight.
That's what, okay.
Ah, wow.
And always something about a real fight. Never running from.
Oh, yeah. Always ready for a real
always fight. Always ready. Okay. Man.
Always ready for a real fight. Sailor
Moon. Yeah, I'm real bad at remembering the lyrics, apparently, because I was way off. So last time we discussed the first six acts of Sailor Moon, which established, was it all of the scouts, or are we still missing a couple? It's been a bit since we recorded that episode, so release times do not match record times on these episodes.
Yeah. I think they're all there, but I don't know. And maybe there's more to come.
No, they don't have.
They have V yet.
They don't have V, who is.
Yeah, no. They don't have V yet.
Which one is she?
Sailor V? Sailor Venus.
Venus. Oh, well, duh. I'm smart. Okay.
She is the Venus Love Me chain.
Oh, man. So, I don't know if we need to go over a review of what happened before. Basically, Sailor Moon, well, Usagi found out that she's a Sailor Scout, Sailor Moon, and then a bunch of random new people showed up at her school, and they all just happened to be the other Sailor Scouts.
In fairness, not all of them go to her school.
True.
Mars does not go to her school. She goes to an all-girls school.
Oh, okay. And she's the one that's at the temple?
Yes.
And has the cool, like, ravens and stuff?
Yes.
Okay.
That are named after Mars's moons.
Oh, okay. That's right.
Phobos and Deimos.
Deimos. Yes.
Exactly. That's why you're on this episode, Brittany, because you actually know.
Because I'm the Sailor Moon lore keeper.
Yes, exactly. All right, so we'll dive into it then, because we got quite a few more acts to get through for this first story arc. So we're going to jump right into Act 7, where Usagi awakes to find herself in Mamoru's apartment, seeing the mask and cape on the couch, which that's Tuxedo Mask for anyone playing along at home.
For those of you keeping score.
Yes, so she sees the mask and the cape on the couch, and she realizes that he's been Tuxedo Mask the entire time, because they keep doing this, like, oh, who is this mysterious stranger, even though it's really obvious that it's him.
Yeah, who's this guy that looks like Tuxedo Mask, is the same height and build and face shape as Tuxedo Mask? I wish I could figure it out.
Yeah, the way that their secret identities are kept in this book is very similar to the Clark Kent Superman thing.
In fairness, there were multiple times throughout the book up until this point where they're like, you're Tuxedo Mask, aren't you? Where she's like, and he's like, you're Sailor Moon, aren't you?
Yeah.
They just won't say it to each other.
That's true. So we get his backstory in this act, where he talks about how he lost his memory in an accident that claimed his parents' lives, and how he was having dreams of a woman who told him to find the silver crystal to restore his memories. So Usagi, of course, you know, being instantly in love with everyone she meets, is head over heels over this Tuxedo Mask fella and lets her guard down. And even though Luna's like, hey, you shouldn't do that.
You should not do that. She's like, I'm gonna, you know what? Fuck you. You're not my real dad.
You're not my real cat dad. So after seeing Sailor Moon's power, the Dark Kingdom believe that she might have retrieved the Silver Crystal, which is the big, like, MacGuffin that everyone's after, that we talked about a bunch in the first one, if you haven't heard that part. So Queen Beryl has been using energy obtained from humans to revive Queen Metellia. The Dark Kingdom sends out video cassettes to brainwash people into finding Sailor Moon.
What are those?
Because this was written in, like, what, 1992 or something? That's when the anime premiered. I think the book started coming out a couple years before that.
Yeah, something like that.
But Sailor Moon breaks the Dark Kingdom's hold on civilians, as she does, because she's very good
at that. That's what she does.
Yeah, that's, like, her whole deal. And she is attacked by Zoisite, which... not sure I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Zoisite.
Okay, I was pretty darn close.
They're all named after rocks.
Ah, yes. They are the Crystal Gems.
Pretty much.
He captures her and creates a barrier to prevent the other Sailor Guardians and Tuxedo Mask from rescuing her. But before Zoisite can kill Sailor Moon, another Sailor Guardian appears and kills Zoisite. There's a lot of murder in this, more than you would expect.
A lot more than I was expecting, I have to be honest.
But the new Sailor Guardian reveals herself to be the one and only Sailor V, who Sailor Moon's been kind of obsessed with from before she was even Sailor Moon.
Yeah, Sailor V was the very first Guardian.
Right.
And she actually has her own series from that time period. From before. There's actually a set of mangas that are specifically about from before the
other Scouts. Those were actually written before?
I believe so, yes. Oh, they were written beforehand and got well-received, and that's when she wrote Sailor Moon.
Yeah. So Sailor V also has a talking cat named Artemis. So now we have two talking cats in this book, which makes it twice as good, in my opinion.
It does. Two talking cats.
So that was the end. So basically this act is, I guess, twofold. It sets up that Sailor Moon and Tuxedo Mask know who each other are now, and also that Sailor V is the final scout they needed to complete their magical girl team until later when they add a lot more of them. But but we won't be covering those acts, at least not now. So, Kieran, thoughts on Act 7?
You know, it's good. I wasn't, like, I like Sailor V. She's cool. She's rad. And obviously, more talking cats is always a bonus. But, you know, I said this last episode, like, Sailor Moon and Mamoru Chan, like, their relationship, I'm just like, whatever. Like, I don't care.
Fair.
I just don't care.
That's a pretty common thing, though, for those two characters, is either people really love them or they really don't.
Yeah.
That's just the way Mamoru is.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
Oh, Tuxedo Chan.
Do you have any thoughts on Act 7 before we move on?
Not specifically.
Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to move this one a little fast because of
White having Bread so Coon many. Could be another name for him as well.
Wow, that's a little harsh. But
Milk Toast Chan.
Damn, just dunking on Tuxedo Mask this episode.
Yeah.
All right, Kieran, why don't you take Act 8 for us?
Act 8, Sailor Venus. Sailor V, by the way, you know, same person, in case you couldn't figure that one out, introduces herself as Princess Serenity, who is the princess that they've been searching for this entire time. So Sailor Moon feels that she's beginning to remember something important to her when her tiara changes again. Sailor V notices that someone is watching them and immediately attacks them with her chain. She realizes it's Tuxedo Mask as he flees. Sailor V thanks Sailor Moon for her hard work and informs her she was watching her and the other Sailor Guardians from a distance. After greeting them, she transforms into her civilian form, Minako Aino. She begins to tell them her story of how she became Sailor V and that she and Artemis have been studying the enemy for some time while she was waiting for all of the Sailor Guardians to awaken their full strength and powers. She tells them that the Dark Kingdom is controlled by a powerful dark entity that caused the annihilation of the Moon Kingdom 1,000 years ago. That night, Usagi dreams of a man rushing to her, calling her Serenity, and she called him Ediminian, great. She runs into Mamoru at the park as he is reading on various crystals. She tries to give him back his watch, but he insists that she keep it. Luna realizes Usagi is infatuated with him, and there's no point in trying to caution her otherwise. Ugh, young love. Meanwhile, Beryl has informed her secret master and advisor, Metalia, that the Moon Princess has appeared. Metalia believes that the Senshi do not possess the Silver Crystal, and so Beryl sends Kunzite to the task. Kunzite begins to steal energy, both electric and human, in all of Tokyo. The Sailor Guardians see that all the energy is being drawn to the top of Tokyo Tower. Sailor V insists on fighting despite the other Senshi's objections. The Sailor Guardians reach the tower and use their power to levitate to the top. As Sailor Moon begins to use her power to heal the city, Kunzite blasts her and she's broken from the group, falling. Tuxedo Mask catches her and she thanks him with a kiss. Oh my gosh. Kisses.
Is this a kissing book?
God. It's a kissing book.
And every 13-year-old hearts just went a flutter.
Yeah.
Sailor Jupiter tries to electrocute Kunzite, but he is protected by a shield that absorbs her attack and begins to increase it. Sailor Moon sees Kunzite readying his attack on the other Sailor Guardians and magically pushes them away from the attack. Sailor V frantically tells them that they have to save Sailor Moon. Tuxedo Mask sees the attack and jumps in between them and Sailor Moon, mortally wounding him in the process. This horrifies Sailor Moon and causes her to cry in intense anguish and sorrow. Jonah, Brittany, do you have any, what do you think of Act 8?
One of my favorite bits is at the very beginning of it, and it's exactly the Clark Kent thing, where she's like, could that be Sailor V? And then she puts on her, like, mask that she normally wears as Sailor V, that those are the red glasses, then they're like, oh!
Right.
And it's like, the rest of the costume totally didn't give it away, but that...
Yes.
I mean, in their defense, though, her costume before was, like, red and blue. Whereas now it's yellow, but still.
That in the prequel comics that happened, it was different colors?
Yeah, it was a slightly different color scheme.
I do actually like the look of their costumes with the crazy mask, but my theory is that they just didn't want to draw it all the time, so they stopped having her wear the mask. Because Sailor Moon had one briefly at the beginning of the series,
too. Yeah, I was going to say, Sailor Moon had one when she first transformed, and I was like, feel like Sailor Moon normally wears a mask, and she like drops it in like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was the whole Naruto goggles thing all over again.
Oh my god, yeah.
It's like, these are annoying to draw. I'll write these out of the story immediately.
Yeah, I'm sure that Akira Oda is really ruining the fact that he made like Luffy's straw hat like such an important part of his character, because god, that thing's gotta be a pain in the ass to draw all the time.
Oh yeah. And it has to be there forever because it is like key to his
character. It is the item, yeah.
This one I actually really liked that Tuxedo Mask felt useful for once. He dies in the process, but he'll be back. I mean, this is comics we're talking about.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, he actually like stepped up and sacrificed himself and didn't feel like a useless character to me in this chapter for like the first time. So it took him a few acts, but he got there.
He got there, yeah. I also really enjoyed where, you know, Sailor V is kind of like explaining everything. And she's like, yeah, so like the enemy, they destroyed the Moon Kingdom 1,000 years ago. And it's like, this is like, because I didn't know anything about Sailor Moon. And I'll be honest, dark entities destroying the Moon Kingdom from over 1,000 years ago and princesses and crystals and stuff, not what I expected. And I sincerely enjoyed, honestly, the batshit insanity of it all.
Wait till you get to the arc that's a circus.
then you'll know true insanity.
There's also a Pegasus in that season.
Oh, that's right.
I do love a Pegasus.
Brittany, do you want to take Act 9?
Yeah. This one starts out with Sailor Moon. She's holding the injured Tuxedo Mask, and she's calling out to him, and he starts to remember his past life as a Prince of Earth. And he realized he used to be Prince Cinnaminion, and that he and Sailor Moon were a beloved girlfriend and sweetheart, Princess Serenity. He calls Sailor Moon Serenity and then loses consciousness. In her anguish, she screams, and her tiara shatters and is replaced with a crescent moon symbol on her forehead, and she transforms into Princess Serenity for the first time. Sailor V's moon symbol vanishes and is replaced instead by the Venus symbol, and she, you know, is clearly Sailor Venus.
Okay, can I just quickly say something here?
Yes.
This is going to sound really stupid. When Sailor Moon screams and turns into Princess Serenity, I was genuinely super shocked. I did not see this coming in the slightest.
I had no idea that she was the princess.
I was full of, well, because I was like, oh, well, she's the princess. And then Sailor V shows up and she's like, I'm the princess. And I was like, okay. And just kind of totally just accepted it completely on face value. And then it's like,
that the Moon Kingdom's princess, Sailor Moon.
Well, it made sense in retrospect, but at the time I was like, oh, of course, and was completely floored.
That's yeah. so great. I'm glad that that trope works on somebody.
I honestly had no idea, and I was just like, whoa, she is. And like the moment where she, like, you know, where she screams out in her tiara shadow, it's really cool. It's very, very, like, yeah, it is very exciting, and yeah, I'm glad that I was able to get, like,
it's a cool
sucked
scene.
In so much.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, no, it's a very cool scene, like, definitely. So Sailor Moon, or Sailor Venus, her symbol gets replaced by the Venus symbol. And then Mamoru's pocket watch, the one that we saw earlier, the broken one, appears, and it starts winding backwards in Serenity and the Senshi start to regain their memories of their past life. And then Sailor Moon, Serenity, Usagi, whatever name you want to call it, remembers how she and Edominion were entered into a forbidden relationship because, you know, they weren't supposed to fraternize with the humans. And that's what led to the war and their death. You know, she cries. And then as she's crying, her teardrop turns into a legendary silver crystal.
What?
And Metalia immediately is like, I feel the crystal, and saying it's giving her strength.
So you're saying the crystal was inside her all along?
Yes, it was. I've been waiting for you guys to hit that part.
Maybe the real crystal was the friends we made along the way.
That it was inside her the whole time. So then Kunzai starts to remember his past. He remembers that he and the other, you know, Zoisite and the others used to be Edominion's bodyguards until they were brainwashed to fight against the moon. And then when they were reborn, they were captured by Beryl and manipulated into fighting for the Dark Kingdom. So then a light leaves the silver crystal, it enters into Tuxedo Mask's body, and then, of course, Kunzai captures Tuxedo Mask and takes him back to the Dark Kingdom. Sailor Venus comforts Serenity, telling her she's the leader of the Senshi, and it is their job to act as Serenity's guardians. Luna also mentions Sailor Venus was a decoy princess while Sailor Moon was developing her skills.
Which is a really good plan, which, like, no one would have seen coming, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, it worked for Padme.
I know.
Right?
Well, it is a very Padme thing. Like, I don't know if they go over it in this chapter or in later chapters, but yeah, that's totally, they've always done that.
George Lucas read Sailor Moon.
Always been her decoy.
Yeah. And he was like, holy shit, fuck, this plan's so good. I'm going to steal it for my movie.
Exactly.
That's why they look so much alike.
Yeah. I mean, so it makes sense.
They look exactly the same. Like, their faces, if you actually look at the way they're drawn, they're exactly the same face, everything, except their hairstyle's different.
Right.
Sailor V and Sailor Moon. So, I thought you meant Sailor Moon and Padme. I was like, what? What is she talking about?
Yeah, they're the same character, Kieran. You should rewatch episodes 1, 2, and 3 just to make sure.
Nick and I were actually talking about watching them again today, and he was like, do we want to watch them in release order or, like, in chronological order? And I was like, well, if we watch the prequels first, like, the advantage is that they're going to be, you know, done, and we don't have to watch them again.
That's fair. We've rewatched them recently, and yeah, they sure are movies that exist.
Yep, they're 24 frames a second.
They are such garbage fires that I do enjoy watching them occasionally. All right, back to this.
Back to things.
Back to Padme.
So she tells them that, you know, V is the leader of the Senshi, and it is their job to act as her guardians. She also, Luna mentions that Venus was a decoy princess, and she's always been a decoy princess, even back on their moon days. And then the next day, the girls all get together.
The moon days.
On the moon days.
The girls plan to try and save Mamoru. But before that, they need more information on the Dark Kingdom and the Silver Crystal. So Luna tells them all that we're going to the moon.
Oh my god. I was like, what the fuck?
And that's that chapter.
Yeah. So I have to say, Act 9 is where this book got really good. Because it's so crazy. And it's, I don't know, it was all the, like, lead up to this was, there was good moments in it, but comparatively feels kind of slow when you reread it, because
you're
just like, okay, when do they, like, reveal everything? And here, this is it. It's chapter or act 9. It's where it gets really good. Just because you get all the backstory, even though, you know, the whole, I knew who Serenity was, but I also have Brittany in the house.
Okay, then.
And I've seen random episodes over the years of Sailor Moon. So, I mean, right. I had an unfair all advantage, right. Kieran. Don't feel bad.
I just love in this chapter, there's like her remembering her memories, and she's like, yeah, she basically just like watched him from afar and was like, he's so cute.
Yeah.
Strong and handsome. And then she snuck off to go meet with him.
Those princesses always up to something.
I love it. It's like intimacy between the moon people and the earth people is forbidden. It is God's law.
Damn.
I know. It's so intense.
Could God give us some clarification on why that is, please? I don't remember reading that verse.
This episode is about racism. Yeah.
I haven't read Bible 2. That's the problem.
Bible 2. This time it's personal.
Yeah.
But yes, the silver crystal was inside of her the whole time. Everything they were looking for.
Yeah. Kieran, any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I would actually really agree with you, Jonah. I thought this was the bit. Like, this was kind of the point where it really, like, where it really kicked off for me, I think, because it just gets very, very odd after, like, yeah. After this point and kind of around here where they're like, we need to go to the moon and Sailor Moon's the princess and the crystal's inside her, but now it's in Tuxedo Mask and he's been kidnapped by the Dark Kingdom. And I'm like, I don't get any of this, but I enjoy its absolute right. commitment to itself, you know?
I did like the reveal, which I don't know if I even remembered when I was reading it, that all the bad guys so far were his guards that were corrupted.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of a cool twist. Mm-hmm. That, like,
which, I mean, makes sense. They're named after rocks that are found on Earth, yeah, whereas the girls are all named after different planets.
Which are but technically he was, giant he, rocks.
Fun fact, he's basically the Earth Guardian. Oh, he's Sailor Earth.
Dang.
Oh.
Where's his sailor costume, because that tuxedo costume,
I guarantee you there's art of that out there somewhere if we really wanted to find it.
Yeah.
It's just a deviant art away.
Ooh. Yeah. One of the other things I like too is to give you a glimpse of an idea of the power of the silver crystal too. Like, when it first shows up, it's like all the people who are injured immediately start feeling better. They show plants coming back to life. Like, they even have like a scene that's like, I don't know, NASA. I'm not sure. And they're like, the Earth is being rejuvenated. And they also show in one of the other spots that all of the other Jadeite, Nephrite, Zoisite, they're all being revived.
Right. Because the ones they had fought and murdered before are now coming back to life.
Yeah.
Which makes the murder okay.
Yes, and Sailor Moon is like, my bad, I didn't know you were actually a good guy. Sorry, I screamed so loud that your face exploded.
Oops, that's really on me. Didn't mean to.
All right, well, let's jump into Act 10 then. So apparently to get to the moon, it has to be a full moon. So while they're waiting for the full moon, Usagi's father gave her the silver crystal, which she asked him to turn into a necklace. Combining their power, the Sailor Guardians are teleported to the moon. Arriving, they find ruins of the Silver Millennium. Approaching the crystal tower, they find a sword that is embedded in a pedestal. When Sailor Venus pulls the sword from the pedestal, a hologram of Queen Serenity appears before them. She spoke to them about their past lives and spoke to them of the evil that was created that would lead to the destruction of the Silver Millennium, which I assume is their kingdom's name.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Of course.
After the destruction, Queen Serenity used her power to seal the evil away and cause everyone to be reborn, which is how they ended up on Earth in the first place. Queen Serenity tells the Sailor Guardians that now they have to destroy the evil once and for all, and reassures Sailor Moon that Mamoru is still alive. Back in the Dark Kingdom, Kunzite returns to his fallen companion's resting site to find them reduced to stones. Kunzite realized who he and his brothers were, and that Tuxedo Mask is their master and
Edominion. Just call him Mamoru.
Oh, God. Tuxedo Mask. Kunzite follows Queen Beryl and finds her conversing with Queen Metalia that a portion of the silver crystal was absorbed into Tuxedo Mask. Queen Beryl tells Metalia that while the portion he absorbed is no longer showing power, he could still be useful.
They've just got to wait for him to piss it out.
Yeah. Oh, man, that is quite the stone to pass. Kunzite regrets working for the Dark Kingdom. I mean, we've all done things in our
We've
past.
All been there.
But Beryl uses her power to bring him under her control. Kunzite uses his power to freeze people and lure out the Sailor Guardians. And Sailor Moon uses her powers to heal the people. So take that, Kunzite.
Neener.
So he goes and chases down Sailor Moon for the silver crystal. But she lures him past the Earth's atmosphere while the Sailor Guardians follow them. That classic trick. So Sailor Guardians are able to combine their power using Sailor Planet power and destroy Kunzite, leaving nothing but a stone behind, which returned to Queen Beryl.
Seems very insulting.
Yeah. Beryl resurrects.
Even had the stone.
It's like sending a message in a box, you know, a thumb.
Yeah.
Old style gangster life.
Yes. Beryl resurrects Mamoru, who is under her control, and gives him the General's Stones, which just sounds interesting.
Wow.
She orders him to kill Princess Serenity and steal the silver crystal. And the last scene is Mamoru / Endymion / Tuxedo Mask dressed in normal clothes walking down the streets of Tokyo. But he's evil now, or is he? And that's the end of Act 10. Kieran, thoughts on Act 10?
The Moon Kingdom, Silver Millennium, is super rad, and yeah. I really, really liked it. It's really interesting. Like, I think going into the series, I thought it was like, you know, girls go to school and like beat up monsters and stuff. And I just wasn't expecting like a kingdom on the moon. And so like, you know, just, yeah, that whole like tone shift for me, like kept it really fresh and kept it really interesting. So, yeah, I really enjoyed this part.
It also definitely sets it apart from the old anime where it had a lot of filler Monster of the Week episodes. So I assumed that the manga had that too. Before I'd ever read any of it. And and it's like, there's a few ones that are kind of like that, especially near the beginning, but the story itself moves at a pretty good pace. Like surprisingly so, like more than I was expecting it to, which was a nice surprise. And
just
all
remember
that
first season's like 40 episodes that they had to extend the story out to.
Yeah. So the whole thing with like, I don't know, all the lore, I guess you could call it, of like the backstory of the moon and everyone, I always thought was really cool, because it's like you said, Kieran, it's like not what you expect if your surface level knowledge of Sailor Moon is just schoolgirls who also fight monsters, which is like, that's a cool idea in and of itself. However, there's actually more going on.
There's much more going on,
which I appreciate.
I mean, the show does have storylines in it that aren't in the books that are also really cool. Like, not Zoisite. Which one is it? Jedite? I believe it's Jedite. There's a whole, like, love story crossover thing with him and her best friend, the normal human with the curly hair.
Oh, yeah. Which we haven't seen
brain.
In a
while. I am totally blanking her name right now. Okay. There's, like, a whole love story thing that happens with them that isn't in the books at all.
Right.
It's just not
since
a thing.
Since they had room to expand all
those. You actually get to know like those characters a lot better in the show. I mean, all the characters you get to know a lot better in the show simply because there's more room for that
growth.
Right,
so
It
doesn't feel like all filler.
So you actually get that.
I would say that it's probably like, so far, like the biggest kind of criticism that I have is that, like, even by this point, like all the guardians are there, but I don't really know like that much about any of them. And so, like, you know, the chance to kind of like know them more or know them better would be, you know, great.
Yeah. And I know that was one of the criticisms when they brought back or redid the show for Crystal, is that Crystal follows the books, the mangas, very faithfully. Mm-hmm. And because of that, people that grew up with the shows first rather than the mangas, there was a lot of criticism that the character development wasn't there, because it really isn't.
Yeah.
But it wasn't there because they're following it very faithfully, and these people seem to forget how little actual character development there is for the other characters in the books.
Yeah.
Like, and that changes throughout the series, and as you get in further, you get more character development of those characters, but in this first arc, they're not fully fleshed out that way.
Yeah.
So, if you really want to get to know the characters better, I do recommend watching the show, too, simply because, the 90s show, specifically, because you get a lot more of that character development of the other characters,
and if you're
the
liking other it, scouts. There's so much of it.
There's so much of it. And I mean, that's when you get to know her school friends. I mean, even the weird kid with glasses, you get to know him way better. I mean, which is cool.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So, Kieran, do you want to jump into Act 11 for us?
You know what? I do. I'm glad you asked me to do that. You've fallen right into my trap.
You're welcome.
You hit it straight to the shadow realm. So, Usagi is asleep, dreaming about Mamoru. After Luna wakes her up, she takes the silver crystal and goes out. After saying goodbye to Luna, someone bumps into Usagi, who she believes resembles Mamoru. Meanwhile, Motoki arrives at the game center with his friend Endo to see Mamoru waiting outside. Mamoru uses his power to cause Motoki's friend to vanish and hypnotize Motoki into believing Mamoru is his friend, which honestly kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
He's just like, he never existed. Forget about him. Meanwhile, Usagi meets the other senshi to study the sword that they got on the moon. They figure out that the sword is even denser than diamonds, and that it has a toxic quality to it. They question how they could use the sword to permanently rid themselves of the evil. Usagi leaves and goes to the game center. She enters to find Mamoru playing at a game council with Motoki. Motoki introduces him as his friend Endo, which causes Usagi to believe him. Minako is alerted that someone is clearing the Sailor V game levels rapidly, and the senshi go to investigate, finding Mamoru playing the game.
They're like, nobody better beat my high scores.
Yeah. Usagi decides to frequently visit the game center to see Endo. As she plays the Sailor V game, he begins questioning her about Sailor Moon and Sailor V, and if there is a control center beneath the Crown Game Center. Usagi resists his gaze and leaves the game center. After speaking with Motoki's girlfriend Reika, who tells him that she never met Endo until recently, the senshi realizes that he's trying to gain access to their control room.
Are you sure the guy who's randomly like, would it be crazy if Sailor Moon had a control center under this arcade?
Wouldn't that be weird? Like, oh my god, like, wouldn't that be so crazy? Like, but no, that's so stupid.
Yeah.
JK. Unless. Nah, JK. Later, Motoko calls the other senshi to the control room, saying that Endo can't be trusted. They are alerted to an intruder gaining access to the control room, and Motoko tries to take the silver crystal from Usagi, but is stopped by Minako. It turns out that Makoto was hypnotized by the enemy to gain access to the control room. The intruders turn out to be Tuxedo Mask and a hypnotized Motoki. Minako transforms and stops Motoki from stealing the silver crystal, breaking the trance with her chain. Tuxedo Mask uses his powers and steals the silver crystal. Usagi hesitates to fight Tuxedo Mask until Luna gets hurt. The silver crystal reacts to Sailor Moon's worry to Luna, and she uses Moon Healing Escalation on Tuxedo Mask. The attack fails and Queen Beryl appears behind her, and she says, "Hey, nothing personal, kid," and she formally introduces herself as Queen of the Dark Kingdom and orders Tuxedo Mask to kill Sailor Moon.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun.
Brittany, thoughts on Act 11?
It's a good act. I mean...
All right, let's move
on. All right, yeah, no, that's...
Just kidding.
That's all we need.
I like that, you know, I mean, she's having all those conflicts within her, but as soon as her actual friend gets hurt, you know, Luna, who's been there this entire time, gets hurt, it's immediate protection mode for her.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
don't
yeah.
you touch my fucking cat.
I mean...
Hello, cat.
Yes, there's a cat in here as we're trying to record.
She just wants to be loved.
I actually also enjoyed this one because it was a little goofy that they're like, who is this guy who looks exactly the same?
Oh my god, yes.
But otherwise, I did enjoy it because it kind of after all the like crazy buck wild like space moon stuff, they're like, let's go back to the arcade for a while. And yeah.
Remember that was a control center under the arcade? Uh-huh. What and about that?
Let's literally bring this back to Earth, like back down to Earth for everybody, which I thought was a good way to kind of do like a soft reset as we lead up to like the climax of the story arc.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then finally, like the reveal of, you know, the Queen Beryl stuff, which is like we know as the audience, but the scouts haven't seen her like for realsies yet. So that was a kind of a cool like final scene in that to be like, oh, hey, by the way, I'm the person you've been trying to fight against. And also your boyfriend should kill you now because I have, you know, him under my control.
So, man, what a reveal.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was a good introduction to them actually getting to, you know, square off face to face, I thought.
Yeah.
Kieran, any thoughts on Act 11?
I'll be honest. When Minako and Motoki and Endo all kind of show up, I was like, who are these people? Because I'd completely forgotten that they existed until like just now when, you know, they became convenient to the story. Mm-hmm. But no, I did like it that it was like, it got real fucking insane for a second there, going to the moon and getting a sword. And there's like a hologram of the queen, but it's not really the queen because she's dead. And this whole like past lovers thing. And then it's just like, how about just a little bit of mind control, you know, a little bit of secret hideout, trying to find your secret hideout through a video game. It's like, okay, all right, let's switch it up a bit.
That's the classic Sailor Moon that we all remember from the first couple of acts.
We all know and love, yeah.
Well, I guess we'll move on then to Act 12. Brittany?
Yeah. So this act starts with Queen Beryl, and she explains that Tuxedo Mask has died, and that the power of Metalia brought him back as an agent of the Dark Kingdom.
Dark Kingdom.
Dark Kingdom. And then fearing that their fight would destroy the control room, Mercury uses her powers to create, like, basically another location for them to fight and transports them all there.
Portal.
And then Beryl, you know, they start fighting and Beryl uses her hair powers to strangle Sailor Moon.
Yes.
And then she basically tells her backstory as far as she was, you know, in the past and she was able to find Metalia, and Metalia was like basically from the sun. She is. They gotta fight the sun.
Damn.
And that she was able to use the power that Metalia gave her and the information Metalia gave her to manipulate the Earthlings and brainwash them. So that way they could try to rule the world. And of course, Venus remembers all this. She remembers that she was the original one who brainwashed them all. She was the one who caused the death of Memoru and Serenity. And she remembers all of that. And so she summons the legendary sword. And Jupiter uses it to try and free Sailor Moon. And then Sailor Venus then summons the power of the sword and impales it into Beryl, killing her.
Damn. So much murder.
Mm-hmm. So like much
a
murder.
A lot of murder.
So much murder. So then Edmonia notices silver crystals reacting and that the legendary star sword starts to show writing on it, which said, "When this sword shines bright, when the silver crystal hidden inside the one who will someday become queen begins to shine in the reaction to the wishes of her heart, she will become complete and reawaken the powers of the moon, offer up a prayer to the holy moon tower, and bring peace to our kingdom once more." Which just tells me in her heart of hearts, she wants to stab Queen Beryl.
Hell yeah.
So after she finishes reading the inscription, Sailor Venus loses consciousness. Edmonine grabs Venus and the sword and drags them through a portal as Sailor Moon follows. And then back at the control center, Luna and the Senshi try to figure out where the portal could have taken them. They discover that it goes to the Dark Moon's base, or Dark Kingdom's base at D Point, which is the North Pole.
Santa's workshop.
And the Sailor Senshi transport there. Sailor Moon is confronted by Edmonin, who is still under the control of Metalia, and he begins to strangle Sailor Moon, and demands she tell him where the silver crystal is. Because the silver crystal he stole does not display the power he expected, it's basically dead, and he doesn't know why. Sailor Moon reached out for the silver crystal, and it created a bright force of energy and frees her from his grasp. The other sentry arrive to see that he is being possessed by Metalia. Luna arrives to tell them that he is powerful because he has a piece of the silver crystal within him. And in order to seal Metalia away, they need the silver crystal in its true whole form. The sentry try to use their powers to attack him, but to no avail. Sailor Moon realizes that to retrieve the last fragment, she is going to have to kill Edominion. The conflict in her heart causes the silver crystal to react, making her choice. Sailor Moon picks up the legendary sword and slashes him across the chest. She kisses him, takes the sword, and stabs herself in the chest.
Oh, damn. My God.
We've got some this very Romeo Juliet going on here.
Oh, I love it. This is what I really liked about Sailor Moon.
All the murder. It was great.
No, go on.
the tragedy and the melodrama.
Yes,
it's so good. Like it's ridiculous, but it's very sincere as well.
Yeah. Also, this one definitely did not go down how I was expecting it to.
No,
because there was a lot more of murdering main characters than I was expecting.
Oh, yeah. I honestly assumed that there would be like a Mamoru-chan, don't, I love you. And he'd be like, but Princess Serenity, Mamoru-chan, please. And then he would be like, I've broken free of her control. And they would be happy again. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect her to cut him with a sword and then stab herself. Mm-hmm. That was, that was a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the things that which wasn't, I mean, you know, wasn't in the description, like the recap stuff is like, why Metalia or why Beryl teams up with Metalia, but it is in the story. I don't know if you guys caught that, is like as she's dying after she's been stabbed, she's like, I finally attained my dream. I finally had you, Prince Edominion. I was always watching you, waiting. So she is like clearly in love with him. And that's she started the war. This is literally what started the war, is that she was in love with him.
They had the same crush.
And damn. He was in love with Sailor Moon, and she was like,
and she's the son.
I'll just start a war. Well, Metalia isn't. This is Beryl.
Oh, Beryl's the son?
No.
Which one's the son?
The one that's been the son is Metalia. She's okay. The one we haven't seen a lot of.
Got it.
Okay. We see a lot of Beryl.
Yeah.
Metalia's just been a spooky figure in the back.
She's always like just a face in like a weird blurry thing.
Yeah.
Because she's not the son. Fully formed.
Got it. And she's the son.
And she's the son. Yeah.
Got it. So she's Sailor Son.
Sailor Son. I don't think she's actually the sun, but she is from the sun.
Got
at least it. That's, you know, what Beryl claims.
Mm. All right.
She was a giant gas storm on the sun, a sinister dark spot.
She's born from sun farts.
Oh, got him. All right.
So, yeah, all right. I always liked that part because, like, it shows what Beryl's motivation is.
Right. So she's not just evil for the sake of evil.
No, she's evil because she's jealous. She's evil
for the sake of love. She'll do anything for love, but she won't do that. All right. So we got two more to go. So I'll jump into Act 13. The Sailor Senshi stare in horror as they see Sailor Moon stab herself with the sword of the silver crystal. I mean, if one of my friends stabbed themselves with a magic sword, I'd probably be slightly concerned as well.
You'd probably be like, oh, damn, that doesn't seem good, eh?
Yeah.
We were only joking about committing seppuku.
Yeah. So they see the light from Mamoru reunite with the silver crystal. The crystal grows larger and forms around Usagi and Mamoru. Queen Metalia grows larger and absorbs Usagi, Mamoru, and the silver crystal within her.
Oh, damn.
Queen Metalia makes her way to the surface, and her form begins to encompass the sky. Seeing their attacks ineffective against her, the Sailor Senshi have no choice but to retreat back to Tokyo. I mean, that's fair. If your enemy suddenly takes up the entire sky, it might be time to go.
Let's just go home.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's fine. You win, I guess.
Fuck, you don't want a bento? Let's just get out of here.
Yeah. So feeling lost and desperate, Luna and Artemis go back to the moon because that's what you do. And prays for Queen Serenity's guidance and help to save everyone. Back on Earth, Queen Metellia's corruption has spread across the Earth. Buildings fall into ruin and people are fighting one another. Unlike normal Earth.
Yeah, which is...
Venus tells the other sailor Senshi that they could help save Serenity and Mamoru if they use all their power and dispose of their transformation pens to help them, knowing it could cost them their lives. Channeling their power through the legendary sword, they throw away their pens and blast their power at Metellia, losing consciousness. Sailor Moon awakens with Metellia and the silver crystal, shrunken back to its original size and changed into a lotus shape. Sailor Moon uses her power to transport her and Mamoru out of Metellia, because they're still inside this giant creature person thing. It's just a weird sentence to say out loud, okay? Mamoru regains consciousness, no longer possessed, to find that he's lost his sight. Sailor Moon uses the silver crystal to attack Metellia, but Metellia absorbs it. She's just so absorbent. She cleans up all the spills, absorbs all your crystal powers. I mean, how do you win against that? So Mamoru finds Kunzite stone and an image of the fallen general appears before him. He tells Mamoru that Metellia's weakness is her heart, which appears on her forehead. Because, you know,
they are from the moon, so true. You know, their biology is probably a bit different.
I was thinking like video game boss weak point, but Mamoru tells Usagi of Metellia's weakness and encourages Sailor Moon that she can win if she doesn't have enough power, he's going to give her his. So it's like, if we all team up and use the power of friendship, we can beat this baddie, because this is manga, dang it. So the silver crystal begins to shine brightly and restores Mamoru's sight as Usagi combines the crystal with the moon stick. Sailor Moon exclaims that she will seal Metellia once and for all. And that's the end of Act 13. Kieran, thoughts on Act 13?
You know, it's great. Like the stakes are higher than ever. And by this point, I was just smashing through the pages because I was like, I know they're going to win. Mm-hmm. And like, I know that, you know, everything's going to kind of turn out all right in the end. But I still want to see how we're going to get there, you know?
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I agree. I think we've mentioned this before, but this definitely gets more crazy than I would have expected. Like the whole like absorbing, you know, everyone into this crazy monster form. And then
I did not expect Metellia to like absorb everything. And then for the other Senshi to like die kind of in a way and just not kind of be there for like, you know, the last little bit at the end. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it definitely subverted my expectations.
Yeah. Which is impressive for something that has been around this long.
Absolutely.
Brittany, any thoughts on this one before we move on?
I always really liked this one. I mean, there's a lot that happens that I don't know if some of it you guys caught, because like it goes like to the back, like her in the past, after. And by the way, the girls didn't just pass out.
They exploded.
They'd be dead.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. They're dead. They're dead.
They're dead. But then it goes back to like them being on the moon and arguing and stuff. And that kind of is nice because it gives you some of that character development and stuff. But I don't know if you guys caught this, but like last time she also stabbed herself. And after Adamantium was stabbed, is protecting her. But the thing that defeated Metellia last time was her mom. Like her mom seals everything away. Her mom seals all of them away so that way they can be reborn. She seals away Metellia. She seals away the moon, everything. That was all done by her mom, basically just wiping the clean slate clean and been like, hopefully we'll do better in the future, guys.
Yeah, that's fair. And her mom is Queen Serenity? Mm-hmm. Okay, that's where it gets confusing because she's Princess Serenity, and I always thought that was like a first name, but it's more like a last name.
Well, I mean, a title. They all I don't know. Are named that.
And doesn't she become Queen Serenity at some
yes,
point?
Yes, she does.
Okay. So that's where the confusion came in.
So a little bit of lore that's not really brought up in this one, but I think is in the next storyline, is the Moon Kingdoms always have one kid and it's always a daughter.
Mm.
So
they're always just like, well, you're the next Serenity.
Yeah, their whole like culture is a matriarchy, not a patriarchy. Like, whoever king her dad is, I don't even know.
That's not important.
It's not important. The only character that matters is her mom. The dad doesn't even matter.
I mean, that's fair.
And even once they're king and queen of everything, she is clearly the primary ruler. And even though he's, like, the king of Earth, he's just like, whatever you say, honey.
whatever you want, dear. It's fine.
So, yeah. She's clearly the ruler in that one. So, but yeah. I like that it shows that little bit. And it's not a lot. It's just that it's one page, but it's like...
Just get a little backstory.
Yeah, a little bit of backstory.
And you see all of them dead before on the steps of the castle. So it's a real downer.
Not passed out, dead.
Yes.
Dead. So one other thing I do like from this chapter that's also a little small backstory thing that's just gives you a little bit of character development on those characters is the interaction Memoru has with Zoisite and Jedi, Nephrite, all of them, where basically their stones, he still had them. And that's the only reason he didn't die is because they protected him enough to keep him from fully dying when she stabbed him with a soul.
So all of his guards basically sacrificed themselves, just like all of her guards are sacrificing themselves.
Yeah, and like the stones all break, but he gets that one last interaction with them and then being like, man, we got to take care of you one last time.
Mm-hmm.
Which I like. I like that part. Because I've always really liked those characters.
All right. So let's move on to our last act. Act 14, Kieran.
Here we go, y'all. Sailor Moon channels the power of the silver crystal at Metalia, but she's unfazed by it. Tuxedo Mask tells her not to lose hope and pray to the Tower of the Moon. She gathers the power from the Sailor Senshi's transformation pen and the legendary sword. As Sailor Moon prays, the Tower of the Moon grows taller. The moon's light shines brightly, and the energy becomes so powerful that Metalia cannot absorb it. As Sailor Moon readies to unleash the power, she focuses all the energy in a single blast aimed at Metalia's heart, destroying her. Sailor Moon collapses from exhaustion and her transformation brooch shatters, undoing her transformation. Mamoru finds Usagi unconscious and gives her a little smoochum, awakening her. After sharing a romantic moment, they find the Sailor Senshi on the ground, not moving. Using the moon stick, Usagi and Mamoru teleport to the moon. Queen Serenity's image appears, wishing them a life of joy with each other, and vanishes, leaving behind a new brooch. Transforming back into Sailor Moon, Usagi uses the silver crystal to heal everyone on Earth, including the Senshi. Upon awakening, the Sailor Senshi are happily greeted by Sailor Moon, and they continue their lives as normal girls.
And there were never any other problems.
Nope.
All right, that's it. So I guess we'll get into thoughts on everything, and I guess the ending as well. I was just going to say, Brittany had a little insight for me that I wanted her to be able to say about how the original ending was supposed to go down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the original ending, how she originally wanted to end this whole entire arc was with everyone dying. Like a true Romeo Juliet story. Like, they all would have died. None of them. She's like, I don't know if I want to keep writing this, so I'm just going to kill them all off.
Right. Didn't her editors make her change it?
I believe so, because she's, they're like, no, you've got something here.
Yes.
Please don't kill off your characters. Like, we will pay you lots of money to keep making this.
You're making an incredibly popular book right now. Mm. Please don't just end it arbitrarily. So that definitely played into the ending feeling like a little bit backpedally, only because I'm like, oh, I can see where she wanted to go with this now that I know that.
No, I was going to say, as far as Naoko Takeuchi is concerned, like, that is it. That is all she wanted to write. But yeah, the anime was apparently also doing really, really well. And so Toei Animation were like, hey, could you not kill everyone? Because everyone's watching a lot of our show right now. And it'd be super cool if you wrote more.
Yeah.
It is a decision I'm very happy she chose.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So many good characters you wouldn't
have gotten. So many good characters. And like, the later seasons are just as good. They're more fleshed out. The other characters, there's so much representation in those series. Like, in that series, those other arcs that, like, yeah, the bi stuff's in here. She's our bi queen. But there's so much more in the later series of representation and stuff that just doesn't get a lot of representation normally. Yeah. Which is why I totally get why all these people and women and femme presenting and all of that are completely in love with this story.
Right. That's totally fair. Well, I had never seen enough of it or read enough of it originally to really know all the story beats. I just knew a few of them from catching random episodes and stuff. So we'd mentioned before a few times, like, where it goes is actually kind of surprising if you didn't know anything about it, because it's definitely pulls it in more interesting directions than I was expecting, especially because it's like crappy to have to say this, but like being a girl's book or whatever, like for all those years, you know, it was like, well, girls read Sailor Moon and boys read Dragon Ball Z. You know, I'm not wrong. I mean, that was like definitely the attitude back in the day.
That was definitely a thing.
Randomly catching episodes and being like, oh, this seems like kind of okay, but then never really pursuing it, and now being like, damn, I should have watched that show that looked interesting back in the day, because I would have liked it a lot, apparently.
Yeah, no, same.
So, I really enjoyed it. I think Sailor Moon is definitely earned its place in the popular manga like pantheon. Like, it's not just popular because it was one of the first things. Like, it wasn't the first magical girl, but it's like the first one to get huge like this, and you can see why. Like, it's actually really interesting, really well written. The characters are fun and takes you in interesting directions. So yeah, an easy recommend from me, Kieran.
I talked about it before, but I'll touch on it again. I will say the romance in Sailor Moon is I don't care about it. Like, but I mean, you know, as Brittany said, like, it's either you love it or you hate it kind of thing. But everything else that wasn't the romance between Sailor Moon and Mamoru was really cool. I really enjoyed it. Like, even the more kind of like basic stuff at the start, where it's more like kind of monster of the week, is still like, it's still pretty fun. And then, you know, after like, what was it, Act 9, when they like go to the moon and there's a sword and a queen and a kingdom, and it's like, it gets real crazy. I was super into all of that, just because it was so far removed from what I had assumed a magical girl manga like was and could be. So I think I would definitely recommend it. Like, you know, even if you're not like a big fan of like magical girl stuff, I would still say, like, you know, definitely read it, because like, then, you know, like, I feel like I understand magical girl stuff more now, having read like, you know, what is not necessarily like the OG, but is one of like the biggest like OGs of magical girl.
One of the biggest touchstones for sure.
And it definitely like defies a lot of expectations, I think, that people have about that kind of about that genre. And yeah, it's just, you know, it's fun. It's funny. It's well written. I would, as I said before, I wanted to get to know the characters better throughout the story. So maybe I'll give the anime a spin. But I mean, like, I feel like if my biggest complaint about the story is like, I wanted to spend more time with the characters, you know, that's not exactly like a bad criticism. Right.
That's why they wanted her to keep making it.
Also, you're in luck. There's like 5 more arcs.
Yeah, that's
oh,
true.
Oh, yeah, no, there's plenty.
So there's a Brittany, lot more. Final thoughts before we end.
I always have really liked this first arc. It is definitely probably the simplest of all the arcs, like, just story-wise. It's very straightforward. You know, there's just really, like, the one main baddie, all of that stuff. but I've always liked it. It's a lot of her and self-discovery and learning about herself and discovering her friends. And yeah, so I've always liked it. Plus, I really like Beryl.
Yeah.
Full honesty, she's one of my favorite bad guys.
Beryl is cool.
She's cool as hell, and she's sexy as hell. I mean, that dress, woo! So, yeah, no, and I've always really liked it. And, you know, if you actually read this arc, it even sets up the next one. It gives you the intro for the next,
arc,
which it does. you didn't include in your recap, but,
yeah.
But it's totally at the very end when they're all, like, good and, like, they're smooching. And then, you know, some weird Luna ball falls on their head, and this little girl falls out of the sky, kisses Mamoru, and then points a gun at Sailor Moon's face and says, Give me your crystal!
Yep.
And you're just like, what the hell?
It's the ending we were all expecting. I mean, it's so predictable, right? My child from the future came and pointed a gun in my face. That old trope.
Seen it a thousand times before.
So, yeah, I think
just feels old now.
That's a pretty solid recommend from all three of us then. So, Brittany, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Brittany Gregory. Just make sure you spell my name right.
Yeah. Kieran, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter. I'm at MrK_Bennett. Or you can check out my D&D podcast. Which is for Crits and Giggles, which is at For CNG Podcast. Or you can go to patreon.com/ For Crits and Giggles. Please give me a dollar.
You should do that. And I am on Twitter at A Real Jonah. And more stuff in the works. Nothing really to talk about yet. So that's it from us. So thank you all for listening. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye. I love you. I'm your moon. You're my moon. We go round and round. From out here, it's the rest of the world. It looks so small.
More mutants, metahumans, or monsters in your life? Then check out these other Geekly Inc. shows, including Cthulhu and Friends, Dear Internet, Greetings Adventurers, Transformation Sequence, and many more fantastic podcasts. You can help us make the show the best it can be by supporting us over at patreon.com/inksandissues, where you can get bonus content, early access to episodes, and can even vote on comics for us to review. Don't forget to also leave us a 5-star rating and review to help us spread the word. Want to interact with us on Twitter? You can find us at Inks and Issues or on Twitch at twitch.tv/inksandissues, where you can find our wonderful editor, Justin, at MRECOCK on Twitter. Now do yourself a favor and go read some gosh darn comics.